super interesting topic, and it's really a fascinating topic in general.
I believe we are really at the edge of a big shift, cultural. It's not just a technology change, it's a cultural change. So we need to be ready for that. Run toward the unknown. When you're riding the big wheel,
you're not alone. Welcome back to Riding the Big Wheel. I'm Michelle Seeger, your host, and today I am talking with a colleague and a friend, Elena Lorenzini. Elena is Vice President of Global Sales Enablement and Incentive Compensation of HP Inc. In her role, Elena is responsible for providing sales enablement solutions that ultimately drive increased efficiency, client satisfaction, and revenue generation for the business across the world. Welcome, Elena.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks a lot. I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Oh gosh, we've been planning this for a long time, and I am so excited for our conversation today. You're probably one of the most interesting and inspirational women that I have had the privilege of getting to know over the years.
Thanks, Michelle. And I know that each time we talk in the last years, there is always a part of our conversation which is about what we do, I mean, the personal touch, which I really like. I believe that even in professional relationship, talking a bit about our lives and connecting on that is really important. So it's good that we are here and now we can deep dive a bit into that.
I think that's just wonderful. So first, I just want to mention, I noticed your background and it says Celebrating International Women's Week of 2024. And you were actually my featured woman on International Women's Day. I have a great picture of you on our Instagram and LinkedIn and other places as well of you cycling. We'll get into a little bit of that, but I wanted to thank you for that and thank you for what you do to just promote women globally. And, you know, we're going to have a great conversation of what it's like to be a woman in leadership and, you know, running a big global business and the ups, downs, ins and outs of, you know, family and work and everything else. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Michelle. And the reason why I wanted to keep this background is because last week, as part of the International Women Week, all the girls in my team, we took a picture with the heart in front of us, even the boys. We asked everybody to do it and we created a nice collage. And we discussed it a bit. This morning I had my all employee meeting and we showed the picture to everybody. I think it's important. It's the Women Week, but it's also Men Week from some perspective, because as I was telling to the men in my organization, I think that their support is critical. So we women came from a long journey to get where we are today. And it's incredible that we can have this conversation that 100 years ago would have seemed impossible, and maybe even less than 100 years ago. So having around us men that are supportive is very, very important in our life and in our work, by the way. NHP is good in doing that.
That's just incredible. And it's great to hear. And, you know, I completely agree with you. So riding the big wheel, it's for and about women in leadership. But you know what? I feature men on this podcast as well, because they're just as important to the equation and where we are today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start with just a little bit about you and your background. I'd love you to talk about your professional journey, you know, starting with in Italy and your move, you know, with HP to Texas, and now the next place that I want you to talk about. And I think it's really surprising, and the reason behind it, I think it's awesome. So just talk to us a little bit about your career, your path, what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, so that's a fun question, which I usually start with a fun fact, let's say it like that, that I studied nuclear physics, and I'm very proud about my studies. So I'm a nuclear physicist. So this is where my career started. And I did it because actually, in my dream, so when I was a child, I wanted to win the Nobel Prize. I think it did not happen.
Wow.
But, you know, I was able to be actually a nuclear physicist for a while. So for a couple of years, I worked at CERN, the European Center of Nuclear Research in Geneva. And I was a physicist. And I think it was a good start of my career, a challenging one. And we will talk about that later when we will talk about women challenges. But this is where I started, and this is what I wanted to do. In the end, I found myself to take a different path. And I entered in HP, which I was basically, I did not have big work experience at that time. I worked in Geneva as a researcher. I mean, I was researching physics. And then I started working in HP, in IT. So the journey in my journey in HP was for the first 7 years, I was in IT. So I was not completely far from the business. It was in a very young and dynamic environment. It was people from all over the world in Milano. So there was a support center for IT with people from all different nationalities. It was super fun. And all these people are still my friends, wherever they are in the planet, because we scattered in different places, we are still friends. So this is how I started. So I spent a few years in IT. And if I'm honest, this year in IT, where I was so close to data, to technology, really helped for the steps I did after. I'm a big promoter of changing jobs. I usually try not to stay in a job too long because I believe that you change, you learn, you change manager, you change team. This helps. If you stay too much in a role, you become some kind of super SME, as I say.
Yeah.
And you start knowing too well what you do. And I think that this is not very healthy, I believe, for a professional development. From IT, then I moved to sales operation. I had a few roles in sales operation, country roles, regional roles, global roles. I was also for a while in a MAD organization, so we're doing merging and acquisition. And then I get back and in and out from sales operation for a while, till I ended in sales compensation. Sales compensation is a difficult job, okay? I think in all the companies, it brings a lot of visibility, because of the nature of the job itself, a lot of pressure, yeah, but also a lot of fun. And sales compensation was actually what connected us in the past. And from sales compensation, from there, my career, actually, with the visibility that I got, I admit that the visibility and the possibility to interact with many of the leaders of the company gave me the opportunities that I had after. So in the end, from sales compensation, the role expanded. Finally, I took the role of VP for sales compensation and enablement, landing to the job where I am now, which is a bit bigger. So there is a learning and development component. I have an inside sales organization with me. I have some pricing components. So it's a broader organization now. And it's a fun job, the one that I have. Really fun. A lot of work, many hours, a lot of pain, but fun. Absolutely fun.
So tell me what brought you and how you made the journey from Milan to Houston, and how was that for you and your family? And now what you're actually in the middle of moving right now, I believe.
So Milano was a big site when I was hired. It was really, I mean, we had, there were probably more than almost 1,000 of people, but this was back in the days, because I need to say that I'm in HP since 25 years. So I'm that old. So I have seen everything in the last 25 years. So 25 years ago, when I started in HP, Milano was a big site. And but over the years, there was an attempt of centralizing some of the function, because over the years, most of the people were sitting in different locations, and there was an attempt to bring people closer to some sites. In some ways, it was to foster collaboration, to ensure that you can go to the office and have peers during doing your same job. So in some way, Milano got smaller. It stayed big in terms of sales, but some of the global function or the operation function were moving around. And then there was the separation. HP got separated into different companies 7-8 years ago. And at that time, I was at the end of a project. I was working on one of the integration projects. So I was on the point to look for another job. I consider myself lucky, Michelle, because at that time I had really the opportunity to change. I met many people over the years in HP, and when I was looking for another job, I had different options. All those options, anyway, imply that I had to move somewhere else. And there were different locations. I could have moved to Barcelona, back to Geneva, where I lived for a few years, Dubai, Germany, or the US. So in the end, clearly, there was a lot of discussion in the family, because I have 3 kids. And at that time, they were 12, 10, and 5, so little kids. Among all the jobs, there was one which I really liked, which was in a BI and analytics function. So my hiring manager at that time took me into this job, and I loved it. So I said, okay, I take this job. And he told me, now I need to tell you the location. And I said, go ahead. And he told me the location is Houston. And I said, okay, I went back home and I talk a bit with my family. And they told me that, fine, let's go. It's an adventure. And this is the way we took it, Michelle. We decided, we considered it an adventure. We decided to go. And this is how our adventure in the States started. And basically, they offered me the job in February. In June, we were in the US. So that was a big
change. Oh my gosh, that was quick.
Yes, it was.
Wow. So how did the family adapt to living in Houston from Milan?
So we considered it, as I told you, we considered it as an adventure. We said, we go,
yeah.
We go, and if we like, we stay. If we don't like, we will find a way to go back. In the end, you know, we came here, you know, new place. Texas is different than Italy, as you can imagine. So we started visiting the places, we got to know people. And, you know, the kids were little, so we were into this big wheel of activities for all of them and making sure that they were fine. So the time went on pretty fast. And, you know, 8 years later, here we are. So, and as I was telling you before when we connected, after 7 years in Texas, we thought it was the time for a change. We wanted to go back in a place with mountains. I know that it seems a silly reason, but we love mountains. We love outdoor. We love hiking. We love skiing, which we did not do it anymore. We love biking. So HP has different sites. We consider a few options. And finally, the decision was for Boise. So in June, the entire family, except one, who will be left here in Texas because one of my son is already in college, we are moving to Boise in Idaho. So this is the next step is Boise, Idaho.
I just love that. And you know what? You just gave a first bit of like advice and information. So if given that opportunity to make a relocation and a major relocation, I love the idea of just thinking about it as an adventure. You know, many years ago, just moving from New York to Atlanta, I really didn't really want to go. I envisioned that I was going to be working in the city. And it was a partner of a consulting firm. And you know what he said to me? Michelle, look at it as an adventure. He actually used those words. And he said, you don't like it? Come back in a year. I'm like, yeah, you know, 20 some years later, I'm still in Atlanta. Although my feet don't stay here very frequently. I'm off to so many different places like you. But I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and in general, I think it's something that I would recommend to anybody because as much as it is difficult to leave family behind, my parents are still in Italy.
Yeah.
My friends, I left many friends in Italy. My kids left their friends. I think in the end, you meet new people, you meet a new culture, and it's not extreme. Italy to the US is different, but it's not extreme change. At the same time, you go through understanding that the world is not the same in all the places.
Yeah.
And I think that for my kids, but even for me and for my husband, I think that the growth we got from the experience itself, leaving the job aside, I think it was incredible. So no regrets. We never had a moment in which we said, oh my God, what did we do? No, never. We always try to take the good things, which I think it's an important learning in life that I try to give to my kids. When you go in a place, when you meet someone, when you visit something, be open. So see the positive side, because there is always something positive in a place, in a culture, in making new friends. So I think that it's an important learning that I'm sure that they will keep with them. And, you know, I remember their first day at school. So we moved in June, and in August they started school. None of them was speaking English. So I dropped them at the bus stop, and they went to school. And for sure, it was a difficult day for them. So now each time they tell me, oh, mom, this is so difficult. I'm always telling them, is it more difficult than your first day to school in Texas? And I said,
wow.
No. You see, you did that. You can do anything.
That's pretty amazing. That's great advice, too. So, you know, you mentioned that you're a cyclist. And I actually know that, right? That's what I featured on International Women's Day. And it's something that you pulled your family into as well, which I think is really wonderful, you know, that whole building some common things with your family. So just talk to me a little bit about what you do in that, how you got into it, how on earth you make time for it with the type of schedule you have and having a family and a really busy career that does cause you to travel. Because I know that people would love to do things like that. They think it's impossible that they could get involved. But talk to us a little bit about what that is like for you and how you got started and where you are today.
So let's start from how I started cycling. Actually, it was my dad. My dad was a strong cyclist. He still considers himself a very strong cyclist. So my dad is 80 now, so but he's still on his bike. So my first bike was a boy bike. I found it under the Christmas tree. I was expecting a pink bike, a girl's bike. No, because my dad thought that the bikes for girls were too heavy, which is a true story, by the way. But, you know, when you are a girl, you're not so much interested in the weight. You want a pink, nice bike. No, I get a blue boy bike. And we started cycling together. And actually, we kept on cycling together till I moved out from my house when I went to college. Every Sunday, we were biking together. And we still do. When I go back in summer to Italy, usually I do a couple of rides with my dad. So this is how I started. And I always loved it. So over the years, I never stopped. And then, you know, I really found cycling is like my yoga. I'm not a yoga person because I cannot stay too much sitting in the same place. So with the bike, for me, it's a place where I'm really relaxing. Either I listen to music or I listen to myself for a few hours. It's a moment where I really decompress. I do it always during the weekend. During the week is not so easy, but for instance, yesterday I finished my day. Now that there is light till late, I had my bike in the car. So I changed myself in the parking lot of HP. And from HP, I went riding. It's not a long ride, but you know, it's baby steps to keep this going. So every day, Michelle, I really try to carve out 1 hour. It's not that much. So 1 hour for me, where I go running or I go biking, usually is one of the two. There was a time where I was swimming, but now again, the time is short. I need to make choices. So either I bike or I run. Sometimes it's indoor biking, fair enough, but it's a moment where it's for me. It's not for anybody else. It's really my time. And I think we need it. All of us need it. So this is how I do it. But I love biking. And having three boys, as you can imagine, as a mom in a family of boys, even the dog is a boy, I need to keep up with them. So this is, biking is, I'm always saying that cycling is the one thing that brings us all together. So we can do it all together. We go on vacation and we bike together, all of us. So, and I'm proud. I'm telling them, maybe I'm the slowest now, but be proud of your mom. Because I'm still keeping up.
I just love that. Yeah, I've been cycling too. I'm a cyclist as well. So I'm going to pull out another great piece of advice that you just said, which is you really try to carve out 1 hour a day. I do the same. And it just seems like women, and I'm not excluding men from this, but I think about even my own home. I've still got a daughter at home. My mom lives with us. She's got an apartment right there. You know, I've got family responsibilities and, you know, I'm running a business and sometimes it can be hard, but it is so important. And I feel very much myself when I just make and take that time for myself. And I'm reading a book right now, Peter Attia. I follow him a little bit. I've been reading the book for a year now, but anyway, Outlive. And he talks about how staying healthy into old age, that just give yourself 1 hour, you know, because I think we're just wanting to stay healthy our whole lives, right? I think that that's kind of the path that you're on.
Yeah, and it's not just that. I believe that as women, we always try to be the best in everything we do, which is a bit of a challenge. We want to be the best mom, the best leaders, the best wives, the best friends. This is putting on us a lot of pressure. And usually the advice I give to women when we talk about the challenges of work, family, kids, I think that we should try not to be the best and accept we cannot be the best in everything. I think we are already pretty good if we try, but trying to be the best in all these different aspects is becoming at some point our limit. I think we need to accept the fact that sometimes we cannot be the best mom because we skip events at school because we cannot be there. Maybe we are traveling. So there are a few things that we miss along the way. does not mean that we are not good mom. And it is the same at work. Sometimes I did not finish with my day, but I don't know that someone is waiting for me to drive. And it's an important moment. So in the end, okay, it's something that maybe I will do it tomorrow and nothing happens. I think that getting to the point of accepting that we cannot be the best in all what we do, it's a moment of liberation. And it does not come very easily because especially at the beginning of the career, you really want to show your value. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you have a lot of things to take care of in parallel. And it's really challenging. So usually my advice to women, accept that you cannot be the best, but you are usually good enough, which is the advice I'm always giving.
I think that's wonderful advice. I got to tell you, when I basically stopped traveling until my youngest daughter, I just gave it up. I actually gave up a particular role that I was in. And when she became 14, I traveled again, right? So I think she had just turned 14 and I went to London. Oh my God. I got back, Elena. I'm like, hi, honey, you know, and I'm going to hug her. She's snubbing me, not even hugging me. I'm like, what's going on? Don't worry, mom. Me, dad, and Libby, we learned to survive around here without you. I don't need you anymore. And I'm for like a week. But, you know, we have to just go on, right? And she survived. She survived. I was gone a week, you know, it was just maybe not even quite a week. But anyway, I think you're right. We have to give ourselves some grace and forgiveness because Lord knows the kids won't.
And, you know, no, I have three kids and I always travel, by the way. I think you were good that you were, I never stopped. So I always travel when my kids were little. The first two were cool with that. You know, my mom, my parents were taking care of my kids when I was in Italy. So there was a backup solution. My third one was giving me the silence treatment when I was traveling. It was terrible. So I was coming back from my business trips and he did not want to look at me. He did not want to talk to me. So this was the third one. You know, the third one is always different. So silence treatment for me. And it is heartbreaking for a mom when your son does not want to look at you. He's ignoring you. So that was really hard.
God. So how did you deal with that?
I discovered that if I was coming back while he was sleeping, when he was waking up in the morning, he could not handle the silent treatment. So I was planning my trip to be able to come back in the morning. So while he was sleeping, so when he was waking up, his natural attitude would be to be very happy to see me. He could not control.
Yes.
This was more if I was coming back during the day.
I just love that. That's really funny. So let me ask you something. How do you balance your personal work, professional life? Like what I mean by that is maybe just share with us a couple things that you maybe have learned that are good things that you would pass on to others that maybe you'd even change. And just kind of how you do make it work, because it seems like you do.
So in reality, I think it's impossible to balance them for a woman. I think you learn to live on, I call it in a multi-layered reality, where while you work, there is a layer inside you which is still paying attention to what is happening, keeping in mind all the deadlines for others, for your kids. There is always a process going on, which we learn to work on all these layers inside us of priorities and cope with them. One important learning of the past years when my workload increased, and at some point I did not have time anymore. And I was getting every day, at the end of my day, really tired. And when you're tired, you know, your patience go down, you're not in a good mood. And I thought it was not good for me and not good for whoever was around me. So usually when I start my day, I do the list of things I absolutely need to do that day. Because then I know that during the day, 100 others are coming in the way, but I know that some are really a must do and some others are not. And if they wait tomorrow, nothing is really breaking. And I tell you, it's a process of accepting that, you know, in our job, Michelle, we can work 24/7. Yeah. It's not at 5, we put the pen down and we can happily leave. No, if we don't put a stop ourselves, we can continue forever. So usually there is a moment where I say, okay, all my must do are done. rest can wait tomorrow. And then, you know, if you are in a company like HP, which is giving you a lot of flexibility, if I step out for 2 hours in the middle of the day for any reason, I can recover. I can choose which time of the day is good for me to work. And this flexibility was the one which helped me to survive in the past years, especially when the kids were little. And the doctor, the vaccination, and today I'm sick. So if you have this flexibility, you are able to deliver a lot of work without compromising on other things which are as important as your work, so, or more important than your work in this case.
You know, I think you bring up a really great point around the flexibility, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that because we still globally, we're still grappling with back to work, right? What that looks like. Now, we happen to have hybrid in the office and people have flexibility here. We have certain days that we like people to be in because of the nature of the collaboration and problem solving that we need to do. And in fact, today is a day that people typically would be home, but I have a couple teams here and they've been whiteboarding all morning. So they choose on their own to come in on, you know, days that we don't ask them to come in sometimes, right? So let's talk about the flexibility because I think, you know, what happened, Elena, when people said they kind of made a stand and said, I'm not coming back, and some people even changed jobs. Then the companies were, you know, saying, yeah, you're coming in. And they started saying, sure, you don't want to come in 3 days. How do you like five then? And there's been these lines in the sand. So how do you find that common ground? What is it that HP has done? And what can others learn from that?
So first of all, I think that HP historically was a company with flexibility. So we always
Okay.
had some flexibility because I think that there is a sense of belonging to the company, this HP way, where you are committed to the work you do. At the same time, we were all in the office. So work from home was something, there was flexibility to do it. So nobody was really, there was no rule for that. But in general, people were in the office. COVID came. Everybody home for quite of a long time. So HP still struggle in bringing back people to the office. So it's a reality for HP as for any other company. We did a few things. First of all, you know, the office have been renewed and we try to create spaces for collaboration. There are several things. Even in the Houston office, there is something really cool, which is a Thirsty Thursday. So usually they bring, after a day of meeting, there is some snacks and wine and beer that you can have enjoying in the cafeteria, which is really nice. And usually that day there is a lot of people. They are coming for meetings and at the same time, you can enjoy some time after that. And there are a lot of events scheduled in the office. I think that the reality is that there are some jobs like mine. I'm on a global role, so I spend a lot of time on the phone. If I simply follow my schedule, I could simply work from home. I don't go to the office because, you know, I'm always on the phone. The fact that I want to see people, that I want to see my team, that I want to meet face to face, helps me to create a schedule for which some days I'm not so loaded with meetings. I'm only partially loaded, so when I'm sitting there, I can greet people, I can go for lunch. And I tell you, the perception when I finish a day in the office compared to a day at home is completely different. When I'm in the office, I'm way less tired because you break, you talk to people, so the human interaction is key. So I think that slowly the people are coming back, slowly, and it takes time to get into that because clearly traffic, you lose some time around. But when the people start coming back, enjoying the company of your colleagues and a couple of words in front of a coffee, half an hour for lunch is bringing back a value that then people want to go back. Again, for me, is nobody's asking me to be there. It's a choice. I enjoy it. I see my guys. We spend some time together and we try to go in the same days. Then the path for full work back to the office, I don't think it is happening. I don't think it will ever happen. I think that there should be a good compromise between some days that you invest at home because there is some work that you can probably do better if you don't have people around. But don't never forget the collaboration, never. Because I think that if you, I think I listening to one of your podcasts, I heard you saying, Michelle, that after a while not talking to people, you lose, you are not used to that anymore, to the physical presence, because you see people in video while the human interaction where you are in presence is very different. And we lose the touch for that, and we should not. So, and I believe that slowly we are getting back to a place which will be the right balance between working from home and being in the office.
See, that's where I am too. And that's my hope and that's my mantra anyway. So I wanted to ask you about it because I think it's really important for other people to hear about what your experience is. I think it was a wonderful opportunity, you know, that the pandemic, there was not one wonderful thing about the pandemic, not one thing, but the one opportunity that it did push forward in our lives is that, you know, this whole hybrid working and the ability to be able to balance your work with your home life a little better. Yeah, I can easily plug in at home too, right? So sometimes that long commute for others. Now I have no commute. Everyone would tell you here, I'm 2 miles from my home, but this is all choice, right? When you're a partner, like all this is choice to be close. But we try to be very cognizant of that and make sure that people have reasons when they're in the office too.
Yes.
Not just checking a box, but to your point, you know, there's reasons that they're collaborating, there's meetings they're having, and they're getting used to being around people again, you know, outside of their family or their immediate comfort zone. It was a very interesting experiment we went through, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it was an experiment from a forced experiment, but we learned a few things. Also, the value of human interaction. When you're deprived of something, this is when you realize the value of things that you don't have. So this is why I believe that human interaction is important. Because yes, video is nice. I can see you. You smile to me. But if we were in person, that would have been something more. So
yep, we'll be in person soon enough.
Yes,
I have a feeling. I have a feeling we have that on the books. So I think this is a great opportunity to transition and talk about AI. Talk about human versus non-human interaction. I know that HP, I do want you to talk a little bit about kind of the future of HP, like their vision and what they're doing. And then you and I had an interesting conversation about AI, both in the workplace and personally. So you might want to start just by talking a little bit about what HP is doing and how they see themselves in the future and what it is that they're offering to the world.
Yeah, this is a super interesting topic, and it's really a fascinating topic in general. And this morning, just to quote again my all-employee meeting when I gathered all the people of my organization, the entire hour was about AI, because it's the big theme in HP. HP wants to be future-ready, and we spend a lot of time as a company trying to explain to everybody what it means to be future-ready. And Michelle, in this moment, this historical moment where we are in, being future ready means to really understand what is artificial intelligence and which value can bring in a company and in our personal life. And HP is investing a lot in terms of training. With me, I have my learning and development organization, and this team developed an entire curriculum about AI, which is called the Learn AI. And we structured in three different modules. The first one is understanding what is AI, what is and what is not. Because I think that, you know, I took the self-assessment test. I thought I was very proficient. I took the self-assessment test and I discovered I'm nowhere.
Oh.
Because, you know, we hear it a lot, but, you know, when you get into the details of the technicalities of what it is, how it works, I realized that I'm not that proficient. So this is the first step. So I took my entire training because I must be proficient. Also to be able to explain it to others. The second step is how HP is using AI internally, because we have a lot of programs currently running to bring AI in the company. So, and it could be to create some kind of digital assistance for employees, digital assistance for sales. And it's really fascinating how much can be done by that and how faster it can be. And let me tell you then, I will come back to this point about how we plan to use it. The third is HP products, because HP is going on the market with products with AI into that. So these are three different modules. Now, this morning in my all-employee meeting, we discussed really about that, because I think that there is a certain fear from the people about AI is coming in a company and taking away work, taking away jobs. In reality, the big added value of AI is to augment our work, not to replace it, to remove from our task things which are repetitive, boring. So if I look at myself and my day, I started using all kinds of functionality that can replace the way I write emails, helping me writing emails, so not in Italian, but in better English than mine, helping me with the presentation, taking notes. These are extremely time-consuming tasks. My job will not be replaced by that, but the time I can use to do other things will be replaced. So if there is AI doing tasks which are extremely repetitive and monotonous and not really creative, this is where I think we should use it. And then you use this time to be creative, to do other things. On the other side, as you know, I mean, it's a complex topic with ethical components, so things that we don't really know completely. So I think that it's a continuous learning. And the way we want to treat it in HP, so it's to keep on refreshing this content. Every day there is something new coming. So we want the entire population of HP, sales and non-sales, to be always super updated about what is happening around. I believe it's a fascinating topic, and I think that the application in our life are everywhere. We are surrounded, even when we don't know, even when we chat with the bot because we want to know the status of our order. So there are some basic applications, but there are some others which are super interesting and very important. So I believe we are really at the edge of a big shift, cultural. It's not just a technology change, it's a cultural change. So we need to be ready for that. And there is way more awareness now than in the past. When these kind of shifts were happening, people were not completely aware. Now we are. So we are way more than in the past. So I believe that being aware is the first step really to unlock the potential from these changes.
So for companies, how do you have a huge organization. How do you even begin to educate them as an organization on what AI can do? And actually, we can even, I suppose, bring it in a little bit closer to sales enablement, how you envision that sales can, utilize the tool, but then how do you get people started?
I think that the way we are approaching, especially with sales, because you know that salespeople tend always to be a bit reluctant to use technology. So I think we are investing a lot of time of my team sitting with sales and doing, using the tools and the technology with them, and really making sure that they understand the added value. Because sometimes when we come with these fancy new technology tools, we give it to sales. And I'm using sales because we really wanted to help sales to do their job better in a world which is different to the one that they were used to before. So sitting with them, helping them understanding the value, going with them through this change, this is what my team is doing. So trying really to ensure that they unlock the potential of what they use. They see the benefits, and if they see it, they want to use it. So this is the way we are trying to approach it. And overall, for my organization, this morning I was in, there were a few presentations for them to get familiar with the topic. And then they need to take these trainings. They are not trainings in the old school way. They are webinars. We have interviews with people speaking, small videos. So it's something that it takes you 5 minutes. So we try to become a bit more modern also in the way we are approaching the communication and the information of what we want to share in terms of knowledge.
I think that's great. So you mentioned that you've been able to leverage it yourself, just in how maybe a letter is being written or something like that. I also have leveraged it personally, and I got to tell you, I love it. And Elena, if you're a good questioner, so I happen to use, we happen to use here at SalesLoop ChatGPT, and I've got my own personal one that I use. And if you're really good in consultants, and you and your role would be good at this, asking really great questions and the right ones, you can get really great information. I had a personal example, and I want you to give a couple of examples. I have a personal example. I have got like the greatest daily workout plan using a combination of weights, balance, stretching, because I'm like you, I do not like yoga. I don't have the patience for that. I want to have a little more motion, right? I try, but, so I'm looking for these, routines, and I want specialization on, you know, shoulders and triceps and arms. And then, but can you give me a little bit more on, you know, legs and what's a good, you know, balanced workout, right? And it came through with something that was really incredible that would have taken me, I don't even know how long to put together. And I think all in all, I probably spent 45 minutes like asking and digging. And I found out a lot of great things too. So how are you leveraging it?
So for the moment, I'm not so sophisticated in this
usage.
I really need to learn from you about these things. No, for the moment, the only experiments I did them. I was curious. I was preparing this presentation, and I was supposed to create the vision and the mission for the organization. And as much as you know, I speak English for my work since 25 years, but still, is not my mother language. So I was trying to put down sentences, and then I asked ChatGPT to rewrite it. When I saw it, I said, okay,
wow.
Then I had to say, okay, maybe less, you know, I don't like the artificial part because whoever works with me, everybody knows the way I speak, my accent, the way I speak and the way I write. So you need to stay always close to who we are, but it can help in creating the right content, and in the right words, something that I'm still not capable to do it, and probably I will never be. But I never used for to prepare my training plan. This could be an interesting one as well.
It was really fascinating. I'm happy to share it with you all, but because I put the questions I asked, and then as I got deeper into the questions in a whole Word document, I'll just send it to you. I promise you. But I did find that it was really fun and saved me. And you know, I do stuff like this too. I'll say for a 90-year-old man, my dad, who has, you know, this particular physical condition, he was a lifelong runner and, you know, in pretty good shape. What are the things that he should do and how can he get on, you know, balance? Because he goes to physical therapy a couple times a month, but a couple times a week, but it's not enough. And you wouldn't believe the stuff that's out there, you know, and then you can dig down a little bit deeper. So it was really kind of fun to go through that process. So I would love for you to just talk to me a little bit about, we'll get personal for a minute again, some things that you would say to others about some of the big things that you have learned that you would like to share. And it could be your view on, you know, a woman being in a profession. It could be your view on what you think is happening in the, you know, with work and business and how we are as a people over the next year or so. But what are some things that you'd like to share with people that you really think about?
I think as an advice for the women, because we talked about that before, which was one of my biggest learning, is again, not trying to do too many things. Trying to concentrate, have goals that you set for you. Personally, as a person, I really need goals. I need to have dreams, let's say. This is also what I'm always telling to my kids. Have dreams. You need to have little, big dreams, small dreams, something that you are really looking for. And you build a path to them. And I think this is an advice that is valid for kids while you are growing. But it's even more important for us, Michelle, because, I mean, I'm not a young girl anymore. But still, I have the right to dream about different jobs I want to do, to different places I want to visit. We need to have goals and trying to reach them. I think that this is what gives us the energy, gives us the commitment to wake up every day and say, okay, today is going to be a good day. And again, when I'm talking to my kids and we talk about success, what is success for me? In my opinion, you are successful if you finish your day with a glass of wine and you said, it was really a good day. So I think that if you get to the point in your life where at the end of the day, in front of a glass of wine, you are able to tell this to yourself, this means that you are really successful. No matter how much money you have, no matter how great is your job, if you get to that point that you are so satisfied about what you did, what you're doing, that today was a great day, tell you. This is, in summary, what is a successful life. So I believe that for me, the learning is that we need to aim to that. So we need to build a path of things in our professional professional career, in our family, around us, our friends, the activities we do, to be able that we get to that point, that every day we call it as a good day. And you actually, there is the reverse of that. You wake up in the morning and you are happy because you have a day ahead of you. So our life should be like that, Michelle. Cannot be like that every day, of course, but if in most of the days we are happy to start the day, it just means that we did good.
I just love that. And you just gave everyone permission to have a glass of wine every single day, right? It could almost be like the goal. Okay, let's make sure it's a good day, because if it is, that glass of wine is waiting at the end of the day, right?
Exactly.
You know, there was a quote, and I'm not going to get it perfect, but my dad and I watch a lot of old classic movies. I talk a lot about my dad. Cary Grant is one of my favorite actors. I mean, he's just a classic man. And, you know, he came across as a very perfect individual and someone that you admire. And he had a lot going on, a lot of difficulty in his personal life. But you know what he said was, you know, because people always admired him for being, he was apparently very kind, very generous. He was always very easy to work with. And he said, you know, he said, I think about the person I really want to be, and I just fake it and act it until I am. You know,
so
I loved it, you know, and I think it's like such a huge piece of advice for all of us. Anyway, that's how I try to live whenever I, you know, sometimes I need to take that deep breath. So let's talk about the future of work real quick. What you think about the future of work is going to look like, because I know that in your company, that's one of the things that you're enabling is what we think that's going to look like. So as you think about 3-5 years out, even how do you think it's going to change? And when we think about younger people, that I agree with you on the importance of this hybrid working, because I think about if it's all remote, how do they mentor in a way that, you know, we were able to mentor by walking into somebody's office and observing how they actually act and perform. So what do you think the future work is going to look like?
I think that you touch an important point talking about the younger generation coming in, because it's true that as all the new generation, they are different. And I think that the expectation they have, and I have some in the house, so I know how it is. I think that they value their free time, they value the flexibility. So the evolution of every company who wants to look at the future needs to embrace that. So we need to make room for the new generations. And in doing so, we need to accept that what they expect is to work in an environment which is not oppressing them. We come from a past where work was different. And also for us, there was a shift over the years. So first of all, I think that this flexibility will not go away also for this reason, because it's some kind of necessary compensation that they want to have. The younger generation are less attracted by money, but they're more attracted by free time and flexibility because they want to enjoy life. And to be honest, I think that they are not wrong in this mindset. The other part, if I look at the future, what I expect, and we talk about that with AI, I think that there will be changes in the way we work. Probably it will go faster and faster in the next years, that we will be able to remove probably component of our work that are not really bringing added value. And I think that this could unleash a significant potential in terms of creativity, because we can use this big amount of data around us in a much more powerful way. And I'm sure that more and more will come out of it. On the other side, and I was reflecting really while I was listening to all these podcasts and training about AI, that the more we push to have bots and some kind of artificial human presence in our work life and in our life, the more on the other side, I believe that this will give value to the human interactions. And if we look professionally, the customer experience, yeah, you can digitize a lot of the customer experience. But if you want to be premium at some point with your experience, I think that the need to have a human being in the interaction will be absolutely key. So I believe that having AI coming stronger in our life, if on one side will replace some of the work we do, I'm truly convinced that at the same time, it will bring even more, it will be even more important how we manage the personal touch, the human interaction. I don't think that this will go away. It's the human nature. And even if on the other side, AI can set some challenges on the way we work, you know, I'm a positive believer that we human beings, we may not be perfect, but I think we are capable to use technology in the right way, so much more than in the past. So this is what I envision a bit in a summary.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you on all of that. I think that's really good and insightful information. I got to tell you, the other day, I received a text about a reminder of an appointment, and I needed to reschedule it, right? So it was something I found out about late on a Sunday evening. So I send this text back to this reminder, you know, email text, thinking it's not a real person, like it's going to go to a something and they'll call me in the morning. And I immediately got a text back. Hey, Michelle, no worries. We'll reschedule it. I'll call you in the morning. And immediately I'm thinking, is that AI or a bot, or is that actually a person responding to me? I mean, it's causing you to question almost anything. And I'm like, okay, thanks a lot. Sure, anything we can do, you know, we'll see you on Saturday. I'm thinking, okay, it's 11:30. Is this a person? I didn't have the nerve to ask her, but I'm going to ask on Saturday when I go in.
And, you know, there are things that the fact that there is not a human person behind is completely transparent to us, and we may not care. In some other situation, I think that you need to have a physical person in front of you. It's not just because you want it, because I think that there are some specific situations and cases where I think it's a necessity. So, and just having this AI coming big and roaring from all the sides will just create more the evidence of the other side, of the need of human interaction and human touch in some of them. So I think that there is, I envision that this is also the positive aspect of AI coming in our life.
I think so too. You know, it's how you choose to look at and embrace it. I think it's an incredible time that we're living in, and an opportunity. Like, I'm really glad that I'm at an age where I feel like I can see a lot of it, you know, and just really see where it's all going to go. Anyway, okay, now I want to ask you the big question, which is about a big wheel moment for you. So everyone who comes on my podcast, I like to ask them about what is something that, you know, it could be big or small as far as the event, but it was pivotal in changing something in your life, what I call the big wheel moment.
I think I mentioned a couple of them. I call them my sliding doors moment. I don't know if you ever watched Sliding Doors, the movie with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, Sliding Doors. Oh,
which
my
is this
gosh.
Movie where there are two storylines. She goes on a train. She does not go on a train. And her life goes in two completely different direction. So I believe that very often in our life, we find ourselves in this sliding door situation, that you may go on the train or not go on the train, and you know that the result of this decision will bring you in a completely different place. And I had a few in my life. One, I mentioned it before, when I decided to leave physics to start working in HP, I knew that as a decision, it would have changed the entire course of my life. I was extremely aware that I was taking a decision that would have brought me somewhere else compared to what I initially envisioned. The second one for sure is when I decided to move to the US, because it was such an extreme change and disruptive from some perspective. I knew that there were opportunities coming from my job, but, you know, leaving family, friends, taking the kids, extracting them, I mean, it's a decision that you don't take lightly. So this was another moment where I knew that the decision would have changed all the rest. And when you do it, you never know if it's the right decision or not. It's a decision. There is no right or wrong. There is a decision that you take and you go in this direction. There is no way to, it's absolutely impossible to know the other direction, what would have happened. So it's behind. I think that these are two moments that for sure, there are plenty of them. But if I need to name two, these are the two that I was completely aware that the decision would have really changed the course of not only my life, by the way, by the life of everybody around me.
Yeah, it really was. Those are two really big things, and don't regret either one, which is awesome. And I love that you said everything's just a decision and things aren't right or wrong. You know, it's what happened at that moment, and then you made a choice, and then that became your history, and then this is your now, right?
Yeah.
And so it's all on, I think, how we look at that part. You know, it's just part of a journey, but how we just look at that. So anyway, I think that's really good information. So do you have, last question, any type of favorite books, or you already mentioned Sliding Doors, a movie, any books that you would pass along to anyone? I always like to give people something, a little takeaway that we enjoy ourselves. Anything you want to share?
So I love books, first of all.
I do too.
I love them. So in this period of my life, I don't have, because I have favorite books that change over the time. But let's say that in this period, it's not a book, but it is an author. I don't think it's very famous. It's called Dr. Robert Sapolsky. And he wrote a series of books about neuroscience. I love the guy, and I love his books. And I think that neuroscience, especially in books which are not very complex. So he explains the neuroscience in a way that everybody can understand. I think it gives me a bit of perspective about people. I love understanding people. So I'm surrounded by people, easy people, difficult people, and everybody has an history. And I think that I wanted to take a bit of a scientific approach and understand a bit more from the neuroscience perspective, the meaning of some behavior. I found it fascinating. When I'm retired, I will take a second degree in neuroscience. So this is my plan, because I really love it. And he's great. He's also doing, he has done podcasts. The way I found this guy, because I was interested in neuroscience, and his entire course, because he's teaching in college, I think it's Stanford, I believe, his entire course is on YouTube. I loved the course. I took it all. And I really enjoyed the way he was explaining. And then I started reading his books. I recommend them. They are not very difficult books. I think they are for everybody. And it gives a very interesting and fun perspective on neuroscience.
Okay,
so this is the topic of the moment. I may change at some point.
Okay, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. And I'll be sharing with you some of my favorite books as well.
Okay.
So Elena, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I know you've got a hectic, busy schedule. You're in the middle of a move. And I so appreciate that you took time to talk to everyone who's listening here at Riding the Big Wheel. So thanks again. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks to you, Michelle. It was a pleasure to chat with you, and hope to see you soon.
Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback. And as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life.